to episode 188 of the Cricket Her Weekly. We're in London this week at my parents' house. It's been my dad's 85th birthday. So we don't have a green screen today, but we're standing in front of my mum's beautiful garden. And yeah, it's been a bit of a London-centric weekend because on Friday we were up at the Oval alongside the Men's County Championship trophy, recently won by Surrey. We also ran into Mickey Stewart, who 91 years old.
Not literally, because we could have knocked him over and that could have been a little bit difficult.
91 years old and still going strong. I told my dad we'd seen him. My dad was like, oh yes, I remember him. I watched him play football for Hendon back in the day. So my dad used to watch him when he was, because he was one of those that played football in the winter and cricket in the summer back in the day. So my dad used to watch him play at Hendon back in the day, but he came with a few anecdotes. He was great fun. In terms of women's cricket, well, who did we run into? We ran into a few different people, but let's start with the chair of the Independent Commission for Equity in Cricket, Cindy Butts. Now, Raf had a chance to have a good old chinwag with her. She actually gave you a copy of her report, didn't she? She had that, and she gave you that, a hard copy of the report. What did you talk about, Raf?
Yeah, the hard copy is pretty chunky, let me just say that, first of all. No, it was really great to have her at the awards lunch. So the Independent Commission have been awarded this year's Ian Jackson Award by the Cricket Society, which is the Society's award for sort of distinguished endeavour within cricket, that can either be awarded to an individual, so Enid Baker won it a few years ago, or it can be awarded to a group of people. So this year, the Cricket Society committee, on which I sit, decided to award it to the Independent Commission because we think that they've made a really important contribution to the future of cricket, we hope, because we hope that that report will very much shape what's to come in future years. So it was really wonderful to be able to meet Cindy and to thank her in person for all of the efforts of her and her committee in producing that award. I was really struck by something that she said, which was very much accords with what she said when the report was released, which is that actually, you know, maybe some people reading it, this won't chime with their experience, but the really important thing that they did in that report and that she keeps emphasising is it's the kind of comprehensive nature of it and the amount of people they spoke to, surveyed, took evidence from. It's very comprehensive, and the report, you can't escape from the fact that the report is evidence-based. It isn't speculative, it isn't making suggestions based on a few individuals. It's very comprehensive and it takes into account a huge amount of evidence that the Commission heard directly from people who have unfortunately experienced discrimination in the game. And she does speak so very powerfully about that. So it was wonderful to have her at the Cricket Society lunch. Sid, you were also able to go and fanboy Cindy Butts a little bit, weren't you?
Yeah, I went up to her and I kind of shook her hand and told her I was a huge fan of her work. She was slightly taken aback by that. She was quite expecting someone to come up with that kind of response to her. I thought what she said was really interesting was that I said to her about what we'd been expecting from the report. I said, you know, when the report was, you know, just about to be released, we'd sat down and talked about it. We'd figured, you know, that they would probably pull quite a few punches and that they'd probably realise that, you know, they could only push so far. And that, you know, for instance, on the players' salaries, that they almost certainly weren't going to say that salaries should be equal because, you know, that was clearly a bridge too far and, you know, we didn't think that was a possibility. So I put it to her, and I said, I was very surprised to see that you did, you know, end up, you know, saying that all the salaries should be equal and things like that. And what she said to me was, well, she said that when I sat down with the commissioners the very first time that we met, I told them that we have to be ambitious. We have to push the game of cricket as far as it can be pushed. And I thought that was really interesting because we talk a lot amongst ourselves about this, what we call the Overton window of kind of possibilities in cricket. You know, that we push quite hard on some issues because, you know, we know that if we push hard, we're not really moving where we're going to get to in necessarily as far as we're pushing. But, you know, the median point, if we say that all salaries should be equal, then it kind of pushes the ECB towards increasing those salaries, even if ultimately they don't reach that equality point. So she really pushed her commissioners to, you know, she said this is the one chance they get. She explicitly said that as well. She said, you know, she told them, you're not going to get to do this again. This is your one chance to contribute. And she said at the end, summing up, she spoke briefly to the room, and she said, you know, to everyone in cricket, you know, if cricket wants to be the equal game that we say that we want it to be, if it wants to be the most equal game in the country, then these are the things that it's got to do. And she was very much, she was like, this is, it's over to cricket now, right? Because their work is pretty much done, isn't it, Raf?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And that's what she said, isn't it? Yeah.
Okay. So,
and let's talk about a couple of the other awards that were also presented.
Absolutely, yes.
Because there are a couple of women-specific awards. The Ian Jackson Award is obviously for overall endeavour, but there are a couple of women-specific awards that were presented at the lunch. The first of which is our Charlotte Edwards Award, which we were awarding for the third time, which is for the best under-16 women cricketer in the country for the last year.
So it's the best schoolgirl cricketer, and previous winners of this, the two previous winners, you may have heard of. So Davina Perrin won it last year.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen her playing in the 100 now, and you know, playing as a regular for Warwickshire, I want to say.
Sparks.
Dear, oh dear, what century am I living in, Raf? And the previous winner to that was a certain Alice Capsey, who's, you know, hit another few runs in a WBBL this morning. She got 50 two games ago, and then the last game, Melbourne Stars actually won a game. In fact, it's the second game they've won, so it's a little bit unfair. But she got 30-odd off 25 balls, so
another
good contribution.
Anyway,
for her.
The winner this year... was Amu Sirinkuma from the Sunrisers, who is an extremely talented young lady, who actually made her senior debut for Sunrisers in July, in that famous victory for the Sunrisers against the Vipers in the Rachel Hayhoe Flint Trophy.
We don't talk about that, right?
Oh, sorry about that. So she hit 25 and took a couple of wickets in that game. So what a brilliant one to make your debut in.
I remember a couple of years ago we were at a Sunrisers Stars game at Beckenham. We ran into Warren Carr, who's actually Amara Carr's father, you know, used to coach the Devon County team back in the day, and is now working with Sunrisers in their pathway. And I remember him saying to us, he said, "Oh, Sid, Raf, I've got this lass. She's only like 13 years old, but she's going to be so good." And it was her. So, you know, that's coming to fruition, and we think that there's going to be a lot more to see from her. And,
yeah.
You know, is an England cap going to be in her future? Well, certainly, a lot of people think
so.
Yeah,
we'll have to see, because she is only 16 at the moment. But yeah, that's always a really nice one to award, because it's kind of an up-and-coming generation. But speaking of up-and-coming, we also do have a Cricket Society Award for Most Promising Young Female Cricketer. Now, despite the fact that the word young is in there, the age criteria is not officially defined for this one. But if you look at the past winners of it, then basically the entire of the current England women's team almost are past winners of this award. So it's quite an exciting one. And this year, the committee chose to be awarded that Grace Scrivens. So it was a double win for the Sunrisers. I would say unprecedented double win for the Sunrisers. However, we know that Grace Scrivens took over the captaincy at the back end of the season, and they had two double wins, or four wins, to wrap up the season. So, unfortunately, she couldn't be there to receive it. We had Danny Warren there, who was able to say a few words about Grace Scrivens and how wonderful she is. And anyone who's a regular viewer or listener to our podcast will know exactly your opinion of Grace Scrivens since.
Yeah, I thought what Danny Warren had to say was really interesting. So, you know, she collected the award on Grace's behalf, and, you know, she said a few words. What does she have to say? Well, it was interesting that she said that she admitted right up front that Grace isn't the most kind of naturally gifted cricketer, you know, in the Sunrisers setup. So, you know, she's somebody that, Danny said, works really hard. So she works incredibly hard on her game. She's always the first one, you know, to arrive in the morning to start doing her drills. She's always the last one to leave the gym in the evening. You know, she's always thinking about cricket. She's got, you know, a brain the size of a planet. We
a
all
badger.
Know that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's all about the hard work for her. And so I just thought that was really interesting that she's one of those who works hard, and I'm sure will continue to work hard at her game. You know, and that's how she's going to improve. Because, you know, there's still definitely steps to go. She's not kind of where Alice Capsey is at this stage. But we think that, you know, the reason that she's got this award is because, you know, that enormous potential to do better. And also as recognition for what she did, particularly in the Under-19 World Cup, in terms of leading England to that final where they kind of just missed out on winning that. As it has to be said, a much more experienced Indian team with a couple of players in there that played full matches for India.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was just fantastic to be able to, you know, give her that award. Right.
Lovely. Well, yeah, it was a really nice day. Anyway, in other news this week, Sid, we have finally had an official announcement about England going to India. They're going to be playing three T20s followed by a four-day test in Mumbai. Now, we've kind of known that this was going to happen for quite a long time, but I have been waiting on the official announcement, and it's a bit of an odd one and a little bit frustrating, because the way it seems to have happened is that Cricinfo have forced the ECB and the BCCI's hand a little bit by actually effectively scooping them this week and writing a piece and publishing a piece that says, by the way, this is happening. And what do you know, 48 hours later, we get an official press release that says, yes, this is happening. So well done, Cricinfo, I guess, for actually stirring the BCCI from their sleep and actually forcing them to officially confirm that this is happening. So it's a very interesting one, because I think there are a couple of interesting aspects to this. So the first one for me is that they're actually not playing any ODIs. Now, they don't have to, because there's no requirement to in the ICC kind of championship schedule, which is the sort of qualification thing for the World Cup. So there's no requirement for them to.
Yeah, England have already played their matches against India.
Exactly, and didn't do particularly well. But anyway, we move on. But it's interesting, because they're obviously focusing on prep for the World Cup, the T20 World Cup, which is, in a year's time, almost exactly in a year's time. And that's going to be in Bangladesh. So you'd think reasonably similar conditions to the conditions they're likely to face in India. But what's happening the year after that, a few months after that, is actually a 50-over World Cup in India. So you'd think that actually the opportunity to go to India this distance from the 50-over World Cup and play some 50-over cricket is an opportunity not to be squandered. So I don't quite understand that decision. I wonder whether, is that the reason for the delay? Were they trying to squish in some ODIs that the ECB wanted, and the BCCI have sort of said, oh no, we can't actually do that. And there's been a bit of back and forth about that. But it just seems like a bit of a strange decision. I understand that you want to play T20s because we've got that World Cup, but we have also got a 50-over World Cup in the not too distant future in that country. And England don't tour India that often.
Yeah, I mean, it is a very tight schedule for India, isn't it? Because, of course, as soon as India finish playing England, then Australia step off the plane and they're going to be playing another test. Now, Raf, I was wondering about this. When was the last time a team played what we'd call back-to-back tests? I mean, I know in the men's game, back-to-back means one, 2 days after the other. But this has got to be a long time since anyone's played two tests, in quite such...
Two tests in the same calendar month. I can tell you exactly this was, because I looked it up and it was... you asked me this earlier and I said, I think it's this, and I looked it up and it is this, so kudos me. It was August 2006, and it was England v India. It was in England, of course, and so that's the last time, and that's actually the last multi-test series that we've ever had in women's cricket. So that was the reason for there being two test matches so close together. So this is obviously not a multi-test series. This is two tests, pretty much back-to-back, as you say, against two different countries. So that's interesting. So India are getting in their test practice. Are the BCCI about to propose a women's test championship? Because they're going to be the people with the most practice. I don't know. But Australia have managed to fit in three ODIs. So they're playing basically an Ashes series by format in India. They're playing a multi-format series whereby the test... three ODIs and three T20s will all count for points, which is really exciting and a great format. And we've talked previously about how other nations should be adopting that Women's Ashes format, because it makes sense and it gives the test a little bit more context and a little bit of additional meaning and everything like that. But Australia will be playing those ODIs, so they will be getting that prep in India. And out of the two teams, in terms of England versus Australia, who needs that prep more? anyway, now the other interesting thing about to revert back to the England v India series for a minute, Sid, is that actually alongside those full England v India games, there's also going to be some A-team matches going on. Now, in terms of the schedule, the A-team games are being played first. So they're being played at the back end of November and early December. And then a few days after that, we're launching into the full England v India schedule.
Yeah, what I really hope here is that England are in a position to be able to send a proper A side to these games. That's what I'm hoping. So I hope it's not going to be just used as warm-up practice for perhaps the players that didn't play in WBBL. And I hope that we're going to see a proper A team. And the really interesting question for me is who captains that A team. Obviously, last summer, the A team played some games against Australia. And we saw Grace Scrivens make a kind of England-ish captaincy debut, because of course he's not internationals, bear in mind. They are A games, despite the fact they seem to be being referred to as 220Is.
Like, I think you mean IT20s in the official press release, but either way, it's wrong.
Yes. So Grace Scrivens captained the one-day games, but she didn't captain the T20 games. Lauren Winfield captained in those ones and did a brilliant job by all accounts. But I would really like to see England play a proper A team. You know, so in other words, not just give a load of warm-up to players that perhaps haven't played such a big part in the Big Bash. And I would like to see, you ready for the bingo moment, Grace Scrivens, I'd like to see her captain those games. Now, is Grace Scrivens in the top 11 T20 players in England? No. Is Grace Scrivens in the next 11? Is she in the top 22 T20 players in England? Honestly, I'm coming from her biggest fan, probably not. But should she be captaining these games in terms of the England captaincy kind of succession? Yeah, absolutely, she should be. Mm.
I suspect, unfortunately, that because of the way the schedule is, that actually those England A games are going to be packed with people who whose place in the main England team is not necessarily secure. So, you know, the likes of perhaps your Maya Bouchers or whoever. Actually, she can't be in it because she's going to be playing in WBBL. So that's going to impact on who gets to play in those A games. But it feels to me like that England or the ECB may use those A matches actually as a kind of acclimatisation games for anyone.
Acclimatisation
games for anyone who hasn't been in WBBL, and actually they want to be warmed up a little bit before those main games.
Yeah, as I say, Kate Cross is one of the obvious ones that could be in it. And obviously, you know, no shade on Kate Cross. I understand, you know, she might well love to play those games, but I'd rather not see her playing. I'd rather, you know, see them send out, you know, one of the very young fast bowlers. Mm. And, you know, send out Grace Hall instead.
Well, we shall see. The other, can I just say one more funny thing about the Australia v India series that's going to follow the England v India series is actually that a few weeks ago, Australia spent an inordinate amount of time doing pink ball preparation for that test. And that was definitely a thing that was being talked about, that the team were actually specifically practicing against the pink ball because it does behave differently. It does look differently when you're playing against the pink ball under lights, etc., etc. So Australia spent quite a bit of time invested in playing a pink ball test. And guess what? It's going to be played with a red ball in the daytime. So, I mean, kudos to the BCCI, who do everything they can to make the most of the home advantage, not just in terms of when the schedule happens, when it's announced, but also in terms of what kind of cricket is actually being played. So there you go.
As the kids say, pranked.
Anyway, I just found that quite amusing. Right, I think we will wrap up there. Sid, thank you everybody for tuning in as ever, and we'll see you in a week's time. Bye-bye.
Bye.